From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Another in a series of fires at black churches in the U.S. An historic South Carolina black church was gutted by a fire Tuesday night, just hours after the NAACP sent a nationwide warning to pastors to be vigilant following the series of blazes in the wake of last month's church shooting. Flames engulfed the Mount Zion African Methodist Episcopal Church in Greeleyville, about 60 miles north of Charleston, as it burned for nearly 3 hours. As of Wednesday morning, the cause was unknown. That same church was burned to the ground by two members of the Ku Klux Klan almost exactly 20 years ago, in late June 1995, the day before the same two men torched the Macedonia Baptist Church in Bloomville, South Carolina. A court in the U.S. gave the NSA a green light to resume its massive spying program against U.S. citizens. According to various media reports, a judge of the FISA court, or the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, ruled that the NSA may temporarily collect domestic phone calls in bulk. The judge also rejected an appeals court verdict against the surveillance program. That comes less than a month after Congress passed the so-called Freedom Act, replacing the Bush-era so-called Patriot Act that was used by the NSA as the legal basis for its spying on U.S. citizens. The so-called Freedom Act allows the existing espionage to continue for a 6-month transition period, but that remains in legal limbo pending Monday's ruling. The Justice Department has welcomed the decision. The ACLU says it will ask the Court of Appeals to issue an injunction to halt the spying program. As expected, Greece failed to make its 1.6 billion euro payment on its debt to the IMF due by the close of business Tuesday, reportedly making it the first developed country to fall into payment arrears to the IMF. CCTV's Jack Barton filed this report from Brussels Wednesday.
EU officials insisted earlier in the day that any deal would require Greece to accept the terms that sparked an upcoming referendum and promote a yes vote.
The Greek government would accept the proposals of Friday night as presented by the president yesterday here and as published by the commission on Sunday morning, and the government would campaign for a yes to these proposals.
A third rescue package linked to deeper austerity measures would still have to pass the German and Greek parliaments. And many economists say that without debt relief, another bailout would place Greece in exactly the same position after it expires.
We will be in the same situation. Do we have to extend another time the plan? Is Greece able to recover? Because this is important. And what do we do with the debt? Because this is the biggest problem for the moment, because everybody knows that Greece will not be able to pay back its debt. Is the contagion risk zero? Certainly not.
The surprise request came only hours before the country's current bailout expired. Athens also missed the deadline for a major debt repayment to the International Monetary Fund, technically placing the country in default. Since Monday, Greek bank withdrawals have been restricted and global stock markets have shuttered. European political deal-making is famous for leaving every critical decision to the very last moment, like the clock on a Hollywood time bomb.
The problem is, when it comes to Greece's debt crisis and potential exit from the eurozone, no one really knows when the potential implosion might come or how much economic damage it would cause.
Jack Barton, CCTV, Brussels.
Germany's Chancellor Angela Merkel announced Tuesday afternoon that no new proposals would be negotiated before Greece's planned referendum on Sunday. On Wednesday, Greece's government came out swinging, with Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras addressing the nation on national television. He told the public that he had made a proposal to the Eurogroup.
If there is a positive conclusion, we will respond instantly. In any case, the Greek government remains in the table and will remain in the negotiations table until the end, and on Monday as well after the referendum. It will be there with better terms for the Greek side, because always the opinion of the people is much stronger than the will of a government. And I want to repeat that the democratic choice is at the core of European tradition in many important times in our history. People have taken critical decisions through referendums. So this happened in France and many other countries with a referendum for the European Constitution, same as in Finland, that cancelled the Lisbon Treaty and went on to grant them better terms. Unfortunately, in the case of Greece, we had different measures. Personally, I never expected the Democratic European Union to not realize the need to provide the people with time to reach a better decision for their future. This led to asphyxiation of the banks of the country, with an obvious goal to put the strain from the government to the individual citizens. This is unacceptable in a Europe that has respect and understanding, to have this sense of shame, to shut down the banks because the government decided to give the turn to the people and to put many elderly people in a difficult position, and even though the government made sure for them to have their pensions. We owe an explanation to those people to protect your pensions. We fight all these months to protect your right for a respectable pension and not to just a tip. The suggestions that they put to us by force asked for a very big reduction in the pensions, and that's why we denied it, and that's why they're doing this now. They asked the government to for one answer to these things, and this was not accepted, because the way out that made sense was to turn to the people, because that's the way for democracy. I know very well that at this time the alarms are going off and they're putting the strain to the people to vote yes for all the measures that the lenders are putting forward, so that you can say yes to everything, so that you will become one with them, to become partners in the continuation of the memorandum. On the other hand, no, it's not just a word. No is a decisive move for a better deal that we're aiming to have signed straight after the result from this Sunday. It's the clear choice of the people about how they're going to live the next day. No does not mean a chasm with Europe, but a return to a Europe with values. No means powerful pressure for a financially viable agreement that will give a solution to the debt. It will not blow it up, and it will not put us at risk. It will not put our betterment of the Greek economy at risk. No means powerful pressure for an agreement that is socially just, that will put the strain on those that have the means and not to those that just receive salaries and pensions, so that we can end an agreement that will include those measures that will punish those who have been feeding these troubles in a financial system, in our economic system, and at the same time it will provide answers for the human crisis, a safety net for those that suffer because of all those things that have been taking place in our country for the past few years. Dear Greeks, I know very well the difficulties that you're going through, and I will do whatever I can for these difficulties to only be temporary. Some insist to connect the result of the referendum with our stay in the country. They say that I have a secret plan, that if no is the result, that Greece will come out of the European Union. They are lying knowingly. And those who say that are the same ones that said the lies in the past, and they offer a disservice to the people. Besides, you know, it was me myself who was a candidate for the Commission in the European elections. Before the Europeans, I put forward the same position, that the austerity measures must stop, that the austerity program that they put on Greece was a failed one. European Union must stop behaving in a way that is opposite to democracy. Unfortunately, some people, some in Europe, refuse to accept and admit. Those who want a Europe that is stuck to thoughts that are not respectful to democracy, those who want democracy, the European Union, to just be held together through the IMF. They have no vision for the European Union. They are politicians that do not dare and that cannot think like Europeans. Near them, next door, the political system in our country, after it led this country to bankruptcy, they're trying to put the blame on us, as we're trying to stop the country from following a path of destruction. They were planning this, either whether we accepted the suggestions from the creditors, either then or now that we're giving the Greek people a chance to speak. Dear Greek people, I want to tell you from my heart a thanks, a thank you for your calmness and the coolness that you keep during the turmoil this week. And I want to assure you that this situation will not carry on for long. The salaries and the pensions will not get lost. Those who chose to put their money safely abroad, those that money will not be lost. I am calling the Greek people to empower this attempt from our side to decline the efforts from the memorandum that destroy us, so that we can turn a new page, a new bright page of democracy and a better hope for a better agreement. It is our responsibility towards our parents, our children, to ourselves. It is what we owe to history. Thank you.
And Finance Minister Yanis Varoufakis held a press conference in Athens late Wednesday. Also Wednesday, a group of leaked internal IMF documents admit that even if Greece were to accept all of the austerity measures demanded by its main creditors, it would still not be able to make ends meet by 2030. Those documents, obtained by a German newspaper, outlined parts of the so-called final proposal offered to Greece by its three main creditors Friday. The documents were obtained by the German newspaper Süddeutsche Zeitung which said the IMF's estimates provide support for Greece's contention that in order to survive economically, the country needs real debt relief, not austerity. Greece's government called a snap referendum for this coming Sunday on the question of whether Athens should agree to the conditions the international lenders set in their last offer. Speaking of default, Russia's giant Gazprom said Wednesday it is halting all natural gas supplies to Ukraine. That announcement came after EU-mediated pricing talks broke down between Russia and its war-torn ex-Soviet neighbor. Gazprom said no more gas will be sent to Ukraine until Kiev pays off its arrears. Ukraine's state energy firm, Naftogaz, said gas supplies to Europe would not be affected, adding that it would continue to transport gas from Russia to its European clients. And another debt crisis has come to the fore, this one in Puerto Rico. Telesur's Cody Weddle has more.
The long-running budget crisis in Puerto Rico has now come to a head. The island is asking bondholders to discuss a moratorium on what it calls its unpayable public debt. The Puerto Rican economy has suffered years of slow or negative growth. As a result, a report by former IMF and World Bank officials says the island's $73 billion public debt is unsustainable. The governor has named a working group to negotiate the suspension of payments.
The goal would be to achieve a negotiated moratorium with the bondholders to postpone for a number of years the debt payment in a way so that we could use that money in these years to pay the debt and invest here in Puerto Rico to create jobs and accelerate the economy.
The White House ruled out any bailout for the island nation that suffers under a semi-colonial relationship with the U.S. This was White House spokesperson Josh Earnest Tuesday.
There's no one in the administration or in D.C. that's contemplating a federal bailout of Puerto Rico. But we do remain committed to working with Puerto Rico and their leaders as they address the serious financial challenges that are currently plaguing the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico. The Treasury Department and other administration officials have been engaged with Puerto Rico to try to help them get access to all available and existing federal resources.
Earnest said the Treasury had also shared its expertise with San Juan. Meanwhile, as Puerto Rico stares into the abyss, apparently alone, a neighboring island nation with a radically different past saw cause for celebration Wednesday.
More than 54 years ago, at the height of the Cold War, the United States closed its embassy in Havana. Today, I can announce that the United States has agreed to formally reestablish diplomatic relations with the Republic of Cuba and reopen embassies in our respective countries. This is a historic step forward in our efforts to normalize relations with the Cuban government and people and begin a new chapter with our neighbors in the Americas. When the United States shuttered our embassy in 1961, I don't think anyone expected that it would be more than half a century before it reopened. After all, our nations are separated by only 90 miles, and there are deep bonds of family and friendship between our people. But there have been very real, profound differences between our governments, and sometimes we allow ourselves to be trapped by a certain way of doing things. For the United States, that meant clinging to a policy that was not working. Instead of supporting democracy and opportunity for the Cuban people, our efforts to isolate Cuba, despite good intentions, increasingly had the opposite effect, cementing the status quo and isolating the United States from our neighbors in this hemisphere. The progress that we mark today is yet another demonstration that we don't have to be imprisoned by the past. When something isn't working, we can and will change. Last December, I announced that the United States and Cuba had decided to take steps to normalize our relationship. As part of that effort, President Raul Castro and I directed our teams to negotiate the reestablishment of embassies. Since then, our State Department has worked hard with their Cuban counterparts to achieve that goal. And later this summer, Secretary Kerry will travel to Havana formally to proudly raise the American flag over our embassy once more. This is not merely symbolic. With this change, we will be able to substantially increase our contacts with the Cuban people. We'll have more personnel at our embassy, and our diplomats will have the ability to engage more broadly across the island. That will include the Cuban government, civil society, and ordinary Cubans who are reaching for a better life. On issues of common interest, like counterterrorism, disaster response, and development. We will find new ways to cooperate with Cuba. And I've been clear that we will also continue to have some very serious differences. That will include America's enduring support for universal values like freedom of speech and assembly, and the ability to access information. And we will not hesitate to speak out when we see actions that contradict those values. However, I strongly believe that the best way for America to support our values is through engagement. That's why we've already taken steps to allow for greater travel, people-to-people, and commercial ties between the United States and Cuba, and we will continue to do so going forward. Since December, we've already seen enormous enthusiasm for this new approach. Leaders across the Americas have expressed support for our change in policy. You heard that expressed by President Dilma Rousseff of Brazil yesterday. Public opinion surveys in both our countries show broad support for this engagement. One Cuban said, "I've prepared for this all my life." Another said that this is like a shot of oxygen. One Cuban teacher put it simply, "We are neighbors, now we can be friends."
According to a pair of letters exchanged between the two nations earlier Wednesday, the U.S. and Cuba will officially reestablish diplomatic relations and open permanent diplomatic missions in their respective capitals as of July 20, 2015. With Greece standing up to its creditors, Puerto Rico being abandoned by its colonial government in Washington, and Cuba getting a glimpse of hope for the future, we asked Dr. Gerald Horn, who holds the John Jay and Rebecca Moore's Chair of History and African American Studies at the University of Houston, if he saw any connections or commonalities between these seemingly disparate events.
Well, the comparison between Cuba and Puerto Rico is particularly apt, since we know that both islands were seized by the United States in the wake of the 1898 war against the decrepit Spanish Empire. They're oftentimes described as two wings of the same bird. However, it's rather ironic indeed that on the same day that the United States announces the resumption of diplomatic relations with Cuba after a half-century hiatus, that Puerto Rico is on the verge of bankruptcy. That is to say that these two nations obviously took a radically different path from the time that they were both seized by the United States in 1898. That is to say, Cuba towards a revolutionary struggle against U.S. imperialism that eventuated with true independence and the proclamation of a socialist republic, and Puerto Rico, which was forced into a different path, which involved more Puerto Ricans living on the mainland of the United States than living on the island, which involves a country, Puerto Rico, that's losing population to at the rate of about 1% a year, and a country that not only is on the verge of bankruptcy, but is also on the verge of a very dangerous socio-political experiment that will involve a further crushing of the living standards of ordinary men and women, which of course brings us to Greece, which faces a similar problem. What's interesting about Greece, of course, is that it is being chosen as a demonstration project. That is to say, here you have this country of only about 11 or 12 million people, which is struggling mightily against the forces of international capital, that is to say, the so-called troika of the EU and the International Monetary Fund and the European Central Bank. And it is felt that if the troika makes any reasonable concessions to the working class in Greece, then Spain and Portugal will be next. And therefore, in order to keep the entire plantation on in line, a slave that is perceived as militant has to be plucked out and given a severe beatdown. That's what's happening to Greece right now, and I'm afraid that a similar fate awaits Puerto Rico.
You know what's different, I guess. I mean, it remains to be seen. But assuming that the Syriza government is on the level and actually chasing the interests of the Greek working class, that is quite a distinction from the situation that the Puerto Rican people face, isn't it?
Oh, well, that's the understatement of the decade. Syriza has been trying to send signals and been trying to play a weak hand strongly by Tsipras, the prime minister, making these sudden appearances in St. Petersburg for the St. Petersburg Forum, conferring with Vladimir Putin. There have been signals that perhaps Athens will turn to Beijing for assistance. Of course, Puerto Rico apparently does not have such options. Puerto Rico, it seems to be, well, it is a neo-colony. And as a neo-colony, it does not have complete sovereignty. What's happening with Greece is that there's an attempt to knock Greece down to the level of Puerto Rico. That is to say, of not having complete sovereignty. That is to say, to turn it into a neo-colony that's deprived of effective sovereignty, meaning that this referendum this coming Sunday, whereby the Greek voters will make a decision as to whether or not to accept the offer from the Troika, will basically be a nullity because it's a neo-colony. In fact, if you look at the TPP that was just passed by Congress, you'll see a similar trend. That is to say, there is an attempt to deprive electorates all over the world of powers and decision-making over what their governments do and pass that on to some sort of supra-institution. Greece is a model for what may eventually befall the people of the United States of America, which is why we have to pay close and careful attention, and why it's also why we have to engage in militant solidarity with the Greek working class, because their fate may be our fate.
Turning back to Cuba for a moment, I'm listening to some of the news reports today covering the reestablishment of diplomatic relations, and even BBC, for example, interviewing people on the streets is trying to accent that there's going to be these big business opportunities for people in Cuba and such, and sort of soliciting folks that'll support that argument. But from almost every quarter, it's something, a position of optimism. At least the embargoes perhaps will be gone soon, and perhaps there'll be increased economic relations with the United States, which they've sought from the outset. Cuba's looking at an upward movement, no matter which quarter really you're looking at, and Puerto Rico just sees more doom and gloom ahead. Why?
Well, why turns on the different paths of development that the two islands took following the U.S. accession of 1898, and then the pivotal turning point of 1959 with the onset of the Cuban Revolution. Puerto Rico took a path whereby it began to send a good deal of its poor and working class to the United States, to Philadelphia, to New York, to Hartford, to Orlando, Florida. And Cuba took a different path, which involved, to cite one example amongst many, defeating the apartheid army on the battlefield of Southern Africa in the 1980s, which led directly to the liberation of South Africa itself. One of the major victories of not only Cuban revolutionaries, but of revolutionaries worldwide and progressive forces worldwide. However, I don't think that it's possible to say that the fate of Puerto Rico has been sealed altogether. As you know, there is a strong progressive movement in Puerto Rico. As you know, that movement has flexed its muscles from time to time. And I dare say that as the pressure mounts in Puerto Rico, the pressure to further reduce the living standards of the working class, that the Puerto Rican left and the Puerto Rican revolutionary movement will begin to flex its muscles once more.
So in other words, if we were going to try to summarize all of that, both the working class in Puerto Rico and in Greece should be looking at Cuba, knowing that otherwise Puerto Rico's present condition, and indeed Greece's present condition, is the future.
Clearly. I mean, Cuba, an island nation of only 11 to 12 million, about the same size as the Greek population, shows that it's possible to sail into the wind, it's possible to engage in a steep uphill climb, it's possible to preserve sovereignty in the face of forces that appear to be omnipotent and all-powerful. You are correct to suggest that if there is a way out for Puerto Rico and Greece, the way surely lies through following the example of revolutionary Cuba.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.